Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's TOC podcast. I'm Joe Weichert, chair of O'Reilly's Tools of Change Conference. This month's TOC theme is authors, and I'm joined today by Rob Eager, founder of Wildfire Marketing, a consulting practice that helps authors and publishers sell more books. Rob's worked with over 400 authors, including several New York Times bestsellers. He's also the author of a book called Sell Your Book Like Wildfire, The Writer's Guide to Marketing and Publicity. And he'll be speaking at TOC's Author Revolution Day in New York on February 12th. So, Rob, welcome to this TOC podcast.
Thanks for having me, Joe. Appreciate it.
So, Rob, you work with authors every day. What are some of the things just off the bat here that you see the successful ones doing that the less successful ones maybe are overlooking?
Well, successful authors don't tell people what their books are about.
Okay.
Now, what I mean by that is that instead they tell people about the value that their book offers by answering the reader's ultimate question, which is, what's in it for me?
Right.
What all of the marketing research that I've done and all the work that I've done with individual clients, it always goes back to the way that consumers buy. And even the way that you and I buy books or food or clothing or electronic gadgets, it always goes back. Before we make the purchase, there's that subtle question. And sometimes it's not even that conscious, but it's there in the back of our mind, which is, what's in it for me? What am I going to get for this purchase? And that's where successful authors do a great job in their marketing, is that they make sure that they answer that question. Whereas unsuccessful authors, they tend to tell people what their book is about or what's inside the book. But that's not enough for the consumer, because a consumer does want to know what's inside the book, but more importantly, they want to know what's in it for me.
Yeah.
Secondly, I would say successful authors will identify their marketing strengths and stay consistent with using those strengths. Two quick examples. I work with a New York Times bestselling client named Lisa Turkhurst. She's a nonfiction author, and her strengths are blogging and speaking. And as we were working through helping her build her platform, we identified that those were her two strengths, because those were things that she naturally enjoyed to do, to the point where she will usually get up every morning around 5:30 or 6 a.m. and you have her morning cup of coffee and write a blog post. And okay. She'll do that every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. That helped her over time build a blog following of over 30,000 unique visitors a month.
Wow.
On top of that, she has really honed her speaking skills. And again, this is all over time. It didn't happen overnight, but she stayed consistent with it. And that began to get her the ability to speak on large national stages, where she was speaking to arenas filled with anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 people. So those two skills alone really helped her take her author platform to a much higher level. That helped her increase her book sales dramatically. Another quick example, I'm working with another nonfiction author named Valerie Burton. She is very, very good on camera. When you put her in front of a camera, she's very comfortable, comes across very poised. So her strengths are TV interviews. And she has gotten, that has led to her getting a lot of appearances on CNN. She recently was on the Dr. Oz show as a featured guest. And then on top of that, she was very consistent about building an email newsletter. And again, over time, she kept honing, writing good issues, letting people know that the newsletter existed. And as the last count I got, she had almost 25,000 subscribers to her email newsletter. So those are two examples of identifying what your strengths are and then staying consistent with it over time, and then you can have some pretty considerable success.
Yeah, it's interesting. It almost sounds like sort of stating the obvious, but it's so easy to get distracted and stray away from your strengths there. And I have to say, the first part of your answer reminds me of an analogy I had heard many years ago, and it's so appropriate. It's all about what you call selling the whole. And it was about this drill salesman who was just cleaning the clocks of his colleagues and just doing exceptionally well. And one of them asked him one time, how is it you're selling so many more drills than the rest of us? And he said, well, you guys are so busy talking about features and selling what the drill is, and I'm out there selling the whole. So right. Basically what that person needs in the end, not the features of the drill, right?
Absolutely.
So you hear a lot about authors needing to create their brand. And I've often wondered, an expert like you, what do you think comes first? It's sort of a chicken and egg situation. Is it the book project that comes first or the brand building?
I go with brand needs to come first. And the reason why is because the brand acts as the umbrella over all of the author's books, whether that's backlist, books they're working on right now, and then new titles they're going to write in the future. And the reason why a brand is so important is because as Americans, we are bombarded with buying choices and different products to purchase. I mean, I think some of the latest research I had seen, and this may even be outdated because our society is moving so quickly, was that the average American is exposed to 3,500 buying impressions every single day. So our brains are literally overwhelmed with choices of what to buy, who to listen to, what experts to follow. So as an author, we're lost in all that mix, and out of sight, out of mind can easily cause an author to become obscure or where even their own audience forgets that they exist. So a brand is an important way to make sure that people remember who you are, but not just who you are, but the value that you can bring to their life through either the fiction or the nonfiction that you write. Now, when it comes to branding, your name is always your most important brand. I mean, that's always going to come back to, you know, what your name actually is. But until your name becomes a household name, then people need to know, what does your name stand for? And when I'm working with clients and helping them build a new brand, I have to remind them up front that you already have a brand, whether you think you do or not. And if you're not working to actively manage your brand in a positive way, then your brand is probably perceived as negative. Now, when I say negative, that doesn't mean that it's against you, that people don't like you. What I mean by negative is that people aren't working off the full information because they don't know everything about you. So they're building a brand in their mind with limited information as to how you can help them, who you are, what your strengths are. So you don't want your brand to just kind of be willy-nilly created by everyone in their own mind. You want to actively control that. In my book, Sell Your Book Like Wildfire, I have an entire chapter 3, on how to build a powerful author brand. And I helped a recent client who had a best-selling book in the business space called The 5 Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. His name was Dr. Paul White. I helped him build a brand called Making Work Relationships Work, because we looked at everything that he did, all the books that he had written thus far, the articles he had written thus far, his whole experience as a consultant, as a client, even his PhD. And what he was looking to do was, he was wanting to help make work relationships work. That allows him, as a new author coming out, for people to be able to say, I can see how he can help me, rather than, who is this guy, Dr. Paul White, that I've never heard before? So that, to me, is why branding is so important.
So let's talk for a moment about branding and how to best go about building one. I think in today's world, where we're so focused on things like Facebook and Twitter, it's easy to lose sight of the power of just a simple website. So how important is it, do you feel, for an author to have their own website, and what are the most critical elements they need to include?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. And authors that I meet who say, well, I don't have a website, or I'm just going to have a little free blog, or I'm just going to let my online presence be on Facebook, I look them in the eye and say, you just killed your book sales. You literally just killed your book sales, because research, in fact, the Codex Group, that does a lot of research for the publishing industry, they're based in New York City. A couple years ago, they surveyed over 20,000 bookshoppers on the whole idea of author websites. They asked over 20,000 bookshoppers, how do you want to follow your favorite authors? And the number one answer, far and away, was they want to visit the author's website, not the author's page on the publisher's website. They want to go directly to that authors.com. And they also found, as they were surveying these 20,000 bookshoppers, that those who had visited an author website in the previous 7 days before taking the survey had bought 38% more books from a wider range of retailers, both online and offline, than those who had not visited an author site before taking the survey. So what it was able, this research I thought was incredibly valuable, because it helped put some numbers to the whole idea, does having an author website really matter? And so this research I thought was incredibly powerful in that regard. I mean, to me, I've always felt like, yeah, it's obvious, but to a lot of people, they just needed to have numbers to back it up. Now, when it comes to an author website, there are four key elements that I recommend to all of my clients. Number one is, have free resources. Have a very robust free resources page. And you can do this whether you're a novelist or whether you write nonfiction. And the reason why I say that is because I've launched at least a dozen new author websites just in the last year alone. When we go back and look at all the Google Analytics to see where's the traffic going, what are the most popular pages, besides the homepage, a free resources page is always the number two most visited page on the author website. And it makes sense, because the consumer is thinking to themselves, what's in it for me? As I referenced earlier, why should I buy this author's book? Why should I, you know, why should I consider letting this author into my hobby as reading, or if I want to learn from them, if it's nonfiction, are they good enough for me to invest my money and my time in? So a quality free resources page can really help answer that question. Secondly, if you're driving traffic to your website, which is what all authors need to do, as you're driving traffic, you want to capture the people's contact information so that you don't lose them. So it's not just a one and done situation where they may come to your website and never come back. When they come to your website, you want to give them a reason to build a long-term relationship. And the easiest way to do that is through offering a compelling email newsletter, because that way you're harvesting their email address. And in some cases, if you have a print newsletter, you're getting their mailing address, so that you're able to, in the future, not feel like you're having to relaunch a new book every single time. As I referenced earlier, my client Valerie Burton, she has over 24,000 people on her email newsletter list. That makes it so much easier for her to launch a new title rather than a lot of authors who they don't build these kinds of databases. It's almost like they have to go back to scratch every single time to get out the word about a new title. The third thing I'm going to recommend is make sure you've got a way for online community to happen on your author website. And that could be through that you have a blog that allows people to post comments and talk back to you. You can have an online forum where you literally have regular discussions happening that either you can, as the author, can create or your readers can create it. And there's two-way dialogue happening there. You can do it through Facebook and Twitter and other social media platforms. But readers want to congregate with other like-minded readers. And as the author, you want to serve as the hub or kind of the ringleader for an online community. You don't want that happening on platforms away from you. You want to draw people to your platform, which is your author website, and be the online hub for that community. And then the last thing I would say for fiction, because fiction still makes up a huge part of what readers are purchasing, is you want to make sure that the emotion of your stories is communicated through your author website, through imagery, through the descriptions. Make sure that when people are checking out your fiction, you let them feel what your story is all about. Because logic makes people think, but emotion makes them act, and it's especially true for marketing fiction.
Okay. I want to shift gears for a moment here and look at the self-published author marketplace in particular. And talking about deep stocking at brick and mortars, which historically has always been kind of the first step towards large numbers of sell-through. And I guess, you know, it's fair to say that that's less important these days because of Amazon's dominance. But to me, it would seem like it's next to impossible for a self-published author to get decent brick and mortar placement. And I got to believe that that's still a key ingredient to success. I mean, Timothy Ferris has been outspoken recently about how Barnes & Noble and others, as he said, are boycotting his book. Obviously, Amazon's going to get behind it in a big way. Is there anything that the run-of-the-mill self-published author can do to influence placement in brick-and-mortar stores?
It's pretty difficult, Joe, because, and the reasoning, and by the way, to kind of go back to square one, I started out as a self-published author 10 years ago before social media and all the new tools we have today, and I struggled mightily to get, you know, placement in brick and mortar stores. And the pushback that I got from the buyers was it was more of a financial or an accounting reason that they didn't want to have to be cutting checks to, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of self-published authors on a monthly basis for book sales. You know, they want to buy from distributors, they want to buy from the publisher. So that was kind of the main problem that I saw. And that really kind of made me say, okay, I'm going to then pursue traditional publishing route. And I, you know, wound up moving from self-publishing into traditional publishing. Now, what I've heard from a lot of agents and even from some acquisitions editors is that if you're a self-published author and you can sell about 3,000 to 5,000 copies of your self-published book in about a 12 to 18 month time frame, that generally is enough to show a literary agent or an acquisitions editor there's a legitimate market for this self-published author's book. And then that can really begin to open the doors for a traditional publishing contract. So, you know, a lot of self-published authors and independent authors these days will say, well, you know, I don't really care about shelf space, you know, in print with brick and mortar. I can sell, you know, thousands of copies via ebooks on Amazon and on the Nook and all the new, you know, the Kobo, all the platforms that are out there. But, you know, I hasten to remind authors that, you know, there's still a, you know, the vast majority is still print sales, and you don't want to let that go. So if you can sell a lot of copies by yourself, I would still recommend pursue some traditional publishing routes. That doesn't mean you're giving up control and profits. You can still buy books back at a deep discount, sell them yourself on your website, at author signings, speaking engagements, and still make a very healthy profit. So I'm more kind of the have your cake and eat it too type of approach.
Okay. All right. So, and I want to go back now to Amazon. I mentioned it earlier. You talked a little bit about it there. And I see so many authors who are laser focused on being successful on Amazon. So they're having all of the publicity they do point to their book on Amazon, not any other bookstore out there. And so I'm just wondering, how important is Amazon to an author's success? And what I specifically would be curious to know is, when you're working with authors, do you typically have them focus on Amazon almost exclusively and assume that the other accounts and channels will follow any success that's generated on Amazon?
Well, I agree with your question on Amazon, Joe, because I got an entire chapter 8 in Sell Your Book Like Wildfire. It's all about how to maximize Amazon and the different tools and options they provide to authors. But what you just referenced is a very interesting point, because there's a lot of backlash in the industry right now that I've actually had two vice presidents of marketing just in the last 90 days alone from two different publishers and two different spheres. So to me, this gives me enough information to say this is a consistent issue. I've had these VPs of marketing tell me that if an author only highlights Amazon as kind of the go-to retailer, like for someone, if someone comes to their author website and they're marketing the book and they say only go to Amazon to buy it, that can get you blacklisted by Barnes & Noble or some of the other retailers out there. So it's right. A huge no-no to only give Amazon as your only retailer option. So to any author listening, please do not do that. I mean, some of the other buyers will literally go to your author website while your publisher, the VP of sales or whoever's calling on that buyer, and they'll say, hey, buy this author's new book. They'll go to that author website right there in the middle of the meeting and look you up and see, well, who are you pointing your audience to? And if you only point them to Amazon, you can get blacklisted. So don't do that. You always give multiple options in any kind of type of online retailing situation. But in terms of Amazon, I do think that because of the size and even just the way they have backed up authors in a lot of different ways. I mean, they're really about the only retailer that has given tools to empower authors to help strengthen their presence online. For example, Amazon is the only one that has the Author Central account, where they give you really just kind of a groundbreaking way to highlight all of your books in one place and connect your author profile with your social media pages on Facebook and Twitter. They allow you to upload up to like 8 personal videos to let readers kind of see more than just your pictures of your book cover on the screen. They let, you know, to let kind of get to know you as an author and who you are as a person as well. Just the fact that Amazon opened up the Nielsen book scan sales data to authors, what to me was incredibly powerful. Because that allows authors to see their actual book sales. And you know, before, publishers would take up to 6 to 9 months to release that data. You know, you had to wait for your royalty check to come along to find out, well, how many copies did I actually sell? Now you can see that almost real time with only like a 1 to 2 week delay on how are your sales actually coming through the various point of sale purchase retailers. And then you can time that to see, okay, how did that occur with specific book promotions that I was engaged in, to see did those promotions work? So I really do like a lot of the things that Amazon has done. And the other thing I recommend to all my author clients is make sure that you are working to get as many legitimate reviews for your books on Amazon as possible, because that's really where Amazon really does kind of own the review space. The other retailers are way behind, and that was probably one of the smartest business moves from a publishing side that Amazon ever did, was to really maximize and grow the whole reviewing process. I tell my clients, nothing attracts a crowd like a crowd. So if you want to draw more attention to your books, you want to have a lot of reviews. In other words, when a reader comes to your book's page and they see that only 5 people have reviewed it, that kind of sends a signal, well, I guess this book isn't that good to create a conversation, or that a lot of people wanted to talk about it. Whereas when a reader sees a book that's been reviewed over 100 times, that sends a strong signal that, wow, this book is, you know, something's going on with this book because a lot of people are talking about it. Now, I stress legitimate reviews, because there have been some stories in the press recently where people were actually buying fake reviews. And to me, you know, that's, you want to be ethical in the process. And in my book, saw your book like Wildfire. I go through a lot of tips on how to do that in a very ethical, legitimate way. But as I stated earlier, nothing attracts a crowd like a crowd, and you want to use that Amazon review process to your advantage.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up reviews, because you're right. Amazon has just so many more on most of the books that I'm looking at than, say, Barnes & Noble, which is, I use a Nook now, and sometimes I find that there are almost no reviews on some of the books I'm interested in. And actually, as a result, what I find myself doing is going to Goodreads now to try to select and figure out exactly whether I want to trust this author and move on to that title. But it's amazing how many more reviews Amazon has on the typical title versus other retailers. And this is terrific information, Rob. As I mentioned to listeners earlier, Rob, you're speaking at TOC's Author Revolution Day on February 12th in New York, and want to encourage folks for more information to go to toccon.com. Rob Eager, thanks so much for talking to us today on this TOC podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.